Drive Time on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Zurich. When investment performance matters, make sure your savings are with Zurich. Visit zurich.ie to find out more.
Well, first this afternoon, we'll go to London, where the tenor bell at Westminster Abbey will toll 99 times from 6 o'clock this evening to mark the death of Britain's Prince Philip at the age of 99. Earlier, UK Prime Minister Boris Johnson paid tribute outside Downing Street.
Like the expert carriage driver that he was, he helped to steer the royal family and the monarchy so that it remains an institution indisputably vital to the balance and happiness of our national life. We remember the Duke for all of this, and above all, for his steadfast support for Her Majesty the Queen.
Well, I'm joined now by royal commentator Richard Fitzwilliams, and thank you, Richard, for joining us this evening. Can you tell us what we know so far about the funeral arrangements? I know it's been reported that there won't be a state funeral and also that there'll be no lying in state. Is that right?
That apparently is the case. And it was always said that Prince Philip wanted a minimum of fuss. It would appear that St. George's Chapel, Westminster, Windsor, is where the funeral will take place. But obviously, there are restrictions with reference to COVID-19, and clearly, we're awaiting further developments on this front. I mean, he was always somebody who was hospitalised several times, and as you know, recently, he'd spent nearly a month in hospital. But he did find that he was a most impatient patient, and this aspect of things, I think he would like to think that his memorial, so to speak, would be the service he gave to the country and to the institution of monarchy and to the Queen personally. And that is the way I feel he would wish to be remembered, rather necessarily than, well, he was never in favour of a state funeral, and I don't think that was something that was going to take place.
Okay, and we don't know at this point when it will take place, do we, or do we have any indication?
Buckingham Palace have only put out a statement to the effect that, sadly, he has died just short, as you know, of his centenary. It would have been wonderful had he made that, but of course he broke so many records when it came to longevity, of course, as the Queen has.
The UK government has asked the public not to gather, not to lay flowers outside royal residences. Will there be any opportunity then for the public to express condolences, do we know?
We simply don't know what is planned. I mean, clearly at this particularly sensitive time, and with the threats of COVID, although some members of the public I've just seen on the television are placing flowers at the railings of Buckingham Palace. I mean, clearly this isn't encouraged because of the dangers, but at some future time, something may very well materialise. I mean, he was an immensely popular figure. There's no question, I would suggest, that it wasn't an easy role for him, walking two steps behind the Queen. He was the generation which excelled in the war, and I think had he risen in the Navy, which was his chosen career, he would, like his uncle Lord Mountbatten, very likely have become First Sea Lord, and there's no doubt at all that he was a sort of phenomenal force of nature, the dynamism, the personality. I think that his gaffes kept him sane. He called it dontopedology, the art of opening your mouth and putting your foot in it.
Simon Jenkins in The Guardian today described his role as a walk-on part in the pantomime of monarchy. I wonder to what extent did anyone outside the British royal family really know him?
Well, I think that the idea of a walk-on part, if you regard monarchy as a pantomime, then you don't take those who participate in it perhaps as seriously as you should. The Queen has been a very important symbol of national unity. For example, I'm thinking of the three broadcasts during the pandemic most particularly, and also when she urged everyone to take the jab. Prince Philip was a great deal more than that, I suggest, because although it's perfectly true constitutionally, role of consort is not one that's defined. Prince Albert, that time, Queen Victoria's spouse, he was able to see state papers, sit in on audiences and so on. The monarchy had no executive power then. Now it does not, and Prince Philip had to create his own role. What was instructive and interesting, I think he was a force for modernization. Sometimes, as in the film The Royal Family, it went somewhat far. Equally, if you look at his award scheme, over 144 countries apparently attached to it, and it is said, or calculated by Giles Brandreth, who did a biography of him, that he was attached to 837 organizations and institutions. There was the walk-on part when it came to ceremonial with the Queen, but then that is significant. We took it for granted, but it was almost as though they had some unspoken bond which enabled these events to go off so well and so smoothly. But he also had time. I mean, as Prime Minister Boris Johnson was talking about him carriage driving, he more or less made the rules for that and was doing it until relatively recently. It's extraordinary. He was literally the Iron Duke, but also a person of tremendous integrity. And although his gaffes did take rather much publicity of his serious achievements, he was someone on the whom the nation and the Queen, with this remarkable relationship of 73 years of marriage, could always rely.
Do you think he enjoyed the role, Richard? Because Harry said in the recent Oprah interview that everyone in the monarchy is trapped. That's how he felt about it. And you know, obviously, the Crown Netflix series is fiction. We know that, but it is based on some true events. And in some of the earlier series, at least Prince Philip is portrayed as, you know, being very unhappy, really, in the role, or frustrated in the role he had to play.
I think that there were enormous frustrations in the early part of it, because since it wasn't constitutionally defined, and since also a lot of courtiers regarded him as being foreign and therefore mistrusted him, also he couldn't give his name to his children and also had wished to stay at Clarence House. There's no doubt at all that there were limitations originally. I think he surmounted them because, firstly, the relationship with the Queen was so remarkably close, and secondly, there's little doubt that he was able to use his energy in so many directions. I mean, few know that he was actually quite artistic with photography and painting and design and reading and the numbers of lectures and so forth. He called himself the world's most experienced plaque unveiler, but he was a great deal more than that. So I think it's much more than a walk-on part, because he was the head of the family and he was a force for modernization. And also he was someone, even if they weren't together on a particular day, the Queen would always speak to him and would always rely on his advice.
Downing Street has announced that for the coming days, ministers will not appear at press conferences. They won't issue press releases or do media interviews. BBC Radio has interrupted all of its radio output to play the national anthem, the British national anthem, when the news broke just after midday. It's obviously, you know, a really big deal in Britain, and something that I think maybe some of us here in Ireland might struggle to understand, you know, that level of a reaction. For people here, can you put in words why it's considered so significant at this moment?
Yes, because the monarchy still has a great deal of significance for Britain and the Commonwealth. But particularly, I think, when it comes to national unity, when it comes to the fact it dates back over 1,000 years, and also not only benefits when it comes to trips abroad, tourism and the like, but people do feel very, very strongly about it, and also a great deal of loyalty to it. And there are a very large number of organizations, institutions, clubs, regiments and the like, which have royal patrons. So there's a web in British life which connects to the Crown. And as you say, this may, to some other countries, seem strange, although there are still over 40 monarchies in the world, so even the Scandinavian, most Scandinavian countries, the world's most egalitarian are. So it's a matter really of of the choice of a nation.
All right. Well, thank you very much for joining us with your insights on all of that. That's Richard Fitzwilliams, who is a royal commentator. And later in the programme, we'll be speaking to Bertie Ahern, who met Prince Philip on a number of different occasions for his memories of the man.